Well, the name of this chapter is Your Dreams Can Come True. Now, the reason we chose this book this year was because I was looking at my shelf of books and I saw this title and I said, "This is it. This is it." I just knew. And unbeknownst to me, Gail Renwick, who also gives talks in this group, had the very same thought. So we were congruent and I contacted Connie and she agreed, and so that's why we're talking about how to change your life. Now, this book is going to be a combination of some basic science of mind techniques. So if you aren't familiar with them, you'll get a little bit of an education, but it won't be dry. And this is not a heavily philosophical book, like some of the books that we have read. This is kind of a, it's all about you and how this affects you, which is why the more I look at this book, the more I go, boy, this is just perfect. Now, typically in religious science churches, they go through the basic techniques in the first of the year, every year, so, but we're going to do it all year long. And so what we did when we set up the schedule for the year is some of the talks will be inspirational or, kind of pump your imagination up, and then it'll be followed by a little bit of the techniques, how to. So if you're following along with us as we read the book, or if you're not able to make meetings, you'll kind of hear that as the year goes on. Title of this chapter is Your Dreams Can Come True. And I was so excited when I saw that title. I knew I had to give this talk. And this is the perfect time of year for examining your dreams and your aspirations. It's when most people set up their New Year's resolutions, but we're going to discuss this all year long. And that's the good news, not just the first month of the year. So there are a lot of juicy chapters in this book that I think you'll enjoy. There are a couple titles. Finding Life's Riches. I like that one. And You're in Charge. Great titles. So this year's talks, like I said, is going to be focused on both inspiration for you and some techniques to help you with realizing your dreams. Now, if you're wondering why we're not setting up a treasure map or vision board, whatever you call it, at this meeting, it's because we're going to do it at the next meeting. And I was unsure if I was going to be here for the second meeting of the month, which is why I volunteered to give this talk. And Gail Renwick will be here at the next meeting, and she's going to be guiding us through the treasure mapping process. Has everybody here done a treasure map?
No.
No? Oh.
They're also called vision boards.
I've done a vision board, but not
Yeah.
I know what it
Same
is.
thing.
I know what it is, but I've really never done one, so.
It's fun. It's creative.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm going to talk for a bit today, and as you know, I normally don't talk for a long time when I do these. And at the end, I have some questions for you to ponder and to answer for yourself. And I dug up some quotes from one of my favorite New Thought writers, Neville Goddard. So, rather than have you guys set resolutions, it'll probably be broken before the end of the month. Why was that negative? This year, why not start the year out with asking yourself some deep questions that could lead to some real transformation and bring your dreams into greater clarity? It's really good to do this on a regular basis, as opposed to just going on year after year without really thinking about who I am, what do I value, what do I want to do with the rest of my life, and what is the first thing I can do to begin living my dreams. And I could tell you, I'm into my sixth decade. Is that where I am, Connie? Okay. And
I don't do math.
Oh,
but the need to dream and to think about what it is you want, it never abates. There's always something else, and that's what keeps us alive. So Joseph Campbell reminds us that we must be willing to give up the life we planned so as to have the life that's waiting for us. The old skin has to be shed before the new one can come. It's like a snake. We need to rediscover our real selves and not some role that society or family has laid on us. So, to start off the process, you don't have to do this here, but you can make a list of the things that you love as well as a list of the things that you do every day. And then start comparing the two lists. Are you doing things that are meaningful to you? Because if you're working full-time and trying to raise a family, it is really easy to lose perspective because you're so busy all the time and focused on earning enough money to pay the rent or mortgage and keep the kids on the straight and narrow. John, I know you know about that.
I certainly do. I'm a family man and a property owner.
Yes, right. And so we know what that's like. And that's why it's even more important to pull some time back and get a hold of ourselves again. So, I could tell you from past experience and observing people that typically what happens, you start out, you go to college maybe, or you graduate high school, you start working, you start the family, you go on and on. It's like being on a treadmill. And then sometimes, like, you hit your 40s. And that's when you start having, could have a midlife crisis. It's your spirit saying, I've had enough of this. Please. And so that's why it's important, because it can be really disruptive to get off that treadmill and say, I'm done. I'm out of here. It's a lot better to stay in touch with who we are and what our dreams and passions are. And as part of this process, when you're looking at the list of things you do every day, you may want to, if you find things that start with, I used to love, or I wish I could, then you know you've got a clue as to where your passions may be. So, for instance, I may be saying, I wish I could go to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And that's a clue to me. Mm-hmm. That I really want to travel. And it's important to me at some point to do some traveling because that's what I really want to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big world. And I've heard so many stories from my parents and my grandparents about traveling all over the world. And I've always wanted to do that. But when you have to work full time and raise a family, and now I'm taking care of my father part time, right now is not the time for me to travel, but I still have that desire. So Holmes says that whatever your personal desires may be, as long as they don't hurt yourself or any other person, then you have a right to attain them, and then you can. So again, the answer lies with your thought and your mind, your creative mind. And remind yourself of this: my thought is in control of my experience, and I can direct my thinking. So when you get done with that list mode where you look at, what do I do now? What do I really want to do? You think, my thought is in control of my experience and I can direct my thinking. So I could think a lot about going to New Zealand. And I expect that I will be there someday. So here's another thought. No one has the right to force you to force an idea or belief on you or a dream. And I just got done reading the book Great Expectations by Charles Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, one of the things that really stood out for me was the fact that there was almost no choice in following your dreams. That the children, or male children, were forced to apprentice to somebody, mm-hmm. typically their father. And, women were expected to get married and have children and take care of the men in their life. So it's really interesting that we have a lot more freedom now, but still, it is possible that your parents or society may try to limit you and put you in a box. And as an example, my father told me early on that I should be a writer. I thought about that. I kept thinking about it. I just didn't want to write. it didn't flow for me. When I had to write term papers and things like that, which I gladly did. But beyond that, I didn't want to write a book. There's no book inside of me to write. And so I didn't pursue that path. We should never allow ourselves to be coerced by another human being into believing something or doing something that you don't feel led to do. So the more you try to force yourself to do something, the further you are from feeling, being in touch with your desires. So that leads me back to saying that our dreams and natural desires are one of our most precious possessions. Stephen, can you get that banner there, please?
The big one?
Yeah. I'm going to talk a little bit about the what we call the teaching symbol in religious science.
Do you want me to put it like this?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. So the circle represents all that is. It might be you. It might be all that is in the universe. And the top part represents the cause of creation, which is your thought or your feeling. And in your life, that's you, of course. It could be society. But at some level, it's always the impetus. And the center section, which is right in here, is the law. And if you study religious science, you'll hear about the law, which receives your thoughts and turns them into physical things, which is the bottom part of the symbol. So that the line starting from here down there is it's a creative process. It's a thought or a feeling which travels through the law and then manifests into physical form. But it doesn't stop there. It goes back up because you always have feedback. So, for instance, let's say I wanted to manifest a Maserati.
Sure.
So, being the magnificent creator that I am, I could do that. But a little bit later, I'd go, nah, that's really not what I want. And I'd probably sell it and go back to my Subaru Forester. So, again, this is a continuous process. It's not a one-time, one-and-done. It's always creation into form and back up with a feedback. So I'm done, Stephen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Can you say just one more thing for the tape? The horizontal lines that are on there, those are the law and the V.
They divide the sections to creative thought, the law, and physical manifestation. Did I get
from
it all right?
The bottom. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Great.
Yeah. So when you see that symbol someplace, either in a book or on the door here, that's what it's about. So I brought along a few quotes from Neville Goddard, who I absolutely adore, as a really good illustration of the creative process. So here's an example of a woman that probably came to him for some advice. And she wants to find a husband. So, and this is all quoted. I'd like to be married, but have not found the right man. How do I imagine a husband? He says, do not confine the state of marriage to a certain man, but a rich, full, and overflowing life. Your desire to experience the joy of marriage. Don't modify your dream, but enhance it by making it lovelier. Then condense your desire into a single sensation or act, which implies its fulfillment. In the Western world, a woman wears a wedding ring on the third finger of her left hand. Now, I dispute that because any cellist or violinist wears it on the other hand. But anyhow, I needed to say that. And you wear yours on the right hand,
too. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Because of the guitar, left hand. But then I wear this Rosicrucian ring, so that's a different idea. Oh, don't include me in that.
Okay, no, this is...
I break all the rules. That is a rule I'll break.
So, he said that, you know, motherhood doesn't... You don't have to be married to be a mother. And you don't have to be married to enjoy the intimacy with another human being. But a wedding ring does imply that one is married. So you can use that as a symbol and relax in a comfortable armchair or lie flat in your back and induce a state akin to sleep, or you're in the green zone in heart math. Mm-hmm. So So then assume the feeling of being married. Imagine a wedding band on your finger and touch it. Turn around on your finger. Pull it off your knuckle. And keep the action going until the ring has a distinctness and a feeling of reality. And become so lost in that feeling that the ring in your finger, when you open your eyes, you're surprised that it's really not there. And I use that as an example, but the essence of what he teaches is that you gotta feel it. Gotta feel it. So then, you know, the next question is, okay, so how long do I have to do that? And so he answers that question. He says, how long should I perform the imaginal act? A few days or several weeks. And he said, when the feeling of reality is yours, the desire to repeat the act of prayer is lost, having been replaced by a feeling of accomplishment. So you don't need to keep doing this forever. At some point, you're going to plateau it out. And that desire or that feeling, you'll have attained the place you need to be at. So you kept persisting in wanting what you already have, although as good metaphysicians, we know that it's important to appreciate what you have. And if you don't reach the point of satisfaction, just keep repeating this over until you feel as though you've touched it and it is yours. And at that point, you need to stop. So one last thought from Neville about our dreams is, when you have a desire, the deeper you, who men call God, is speaking. So in other words, it's not just you, it's also the universe. He urges you through the language of desire to accept that which is not, that which is to be. Desire is simply his communication with you, telling you that your desire is yours now. Your acceptance of this fact is proved by your complete adjustment to it, as though it were true. So what I did was I put together some questions that you can ask yourself. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read it, and you can sit down and, you know, think through it. Maybe write the question down and the answer. It's helpful to have a pad of paper. And I've got one.
Anybody need paper?
I've got six questions.
Oh, yeah, there's some. Six.
Everybody happy?
Yeah.
Okay. The first question is, what truly matters to me? What's important to me? What's meaningful to me? And we'll take a couple minutes for that. I'm going to move on to the next question. Mm-hmm. What do I value? Am I living into my values and priorities?
Go with my heart or my gut.
Yeah, exactly. And along with that is, am I living into my values and priorities? The answer should be yes.
Helpful hint.
Okay, guys, you're having too much fun.
Fun is one of their priorities.
I'm going to put that on mine. That was part of my number one answer.
I'm adding that to my number one answer.
Me too. Are we ready for the next question?
Yeah, ready.
What excites and enlivens me besides having fun? And drinking coffee.
Cognizant.
What excites and enlivens me?
Thank you.
Okay, I have another question for you. What do I want to do that I would regret if I don't do it? Again, what do I want to do that I would regret if I don't do it? Next question. What did I used to enjoy that hadn't been a part of my life recently? Again, what did I used to enjoy that hasn't been part of my life recently? And last but not least, what makes me feel good and nourished? besides ice cream.
Coffee.
Coffee. So this is not a one-and-done exercise. I was assuming when I put these questions together that this would be something you may want to think about maybe when you're home and it's quiet or something like that. But whatever these answers are, they need to be your answers, not me telling Connie, eating ice cream for lunch every day is... will make you feel nourished or something like that. But it's not anybody else's idea for us, but what comes up from inside of us when we ask these questions. And take the time to focus on your dreams and your desires, because that's what begins the creative process. And your dreams and desires are God speaking to you about what you really value, what you really want to bring into your life. So it is.
So it is.
So it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay.